In Revelation chapter 9, we had just started this chapter in our last study together. Just let me bring you up to where we're at in our study if you haven't been with us. Remember the opening of the seven seals. In chapter 8, the seventh seal was opened on the scroll that the Lord had taken from God's hand. With the opening of that seventh seal, there were seven trumpets to sound. In chapter 8, we saw the sounding of four of those trumpets. Then at verse 13, at the end of the fourth sounding, "And I looked, and I heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because of the remaining blast of the trumpet, three angels who are about to sound. Woe, 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 disaster, 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 or destruction, 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 or misery, misery, misery." So four of the trumpets sounded. Now three more trumpets are going to sound, and with each one of the sounding of those trumpets comes a woe, misery, or destruction. In chapter 9, at the beginning of chapter 9 in verse 1, we have the sounding of the fifth trumpet. Then later on in verse 13 of chapter 9, we have the sounding of the sixth trumpet. But the seventh trumpet does not sound till chapter 11. Chapter 10, you see, is what we saw back earlier in chapter 7, what some refer to as an interlude. Back in chapter 7, after the sounding, after the opening of the sixth seal, before the seventh seal was opened, chapter 7 was introduced, and we said that to some that's an interlude, but I said it also could be part of the opening of the sixth seal. We'll see the same thing in chapter 10, before the seventh trumpet sounds and the final woe is mentioned in chapter 11. Chapter 11, and in verse 15, "Then the seventh angel sounded." So we don't see the sounding of the seventh trumpet until chapter 11 and verse 15. Chapter 10 may be an interlude, as we said, as chapter 7 was, but chapter 10 could also be a continuation of the sounding of the sixth trumpet, because the end of the sixth trumpet is not mentioned until verse 14 of chapter 11. "The second woe is past. Behold, the third woe is coming quickly." The second woe is the sounding of the sixth trumpet. And so the second woe is past. But we see the sounding of that sixth trumpet, and that second woe takes up all of chapter 10 and into chapter 11. So we could refer to it as an interlude, but it might just be a continuation of the sounding of that trumpet. Picking up at verse 1 in chapter 9, we got into this in our last study, but we did not get very far. Let's read the first 11, 12 verses, and then come back with our comments. "Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth, and to him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. Then out of the smoke locusts came upon the earth, and to them was given power as the scorpions of the earth have power. They were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth or any green thing or any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. And they were not given authority to kill them, but to torment them for 5 months. And their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when he strikes a man. In those days men will seek death and will not find it. They will desire to die, and death will flee from them. And the shape of the locusts was like horses prepared for battle, and on their heads were crowns of something like gold, and their faces were like the faces of men. They had hair like women's hair, and their teeth were like lion's teeth. And they had breastplates like the breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots with many horses running into battle. They had tails like scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. And they had a king over them, the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, but in Greek he has the name of Apollyon. One woe is past. Behold, still two more woes are coming after this. The two more woes coming after this is the sounding of the sixth trumpet and then the sounding of the seventh trumpet. So here in chapter 9 and verse 1, the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. Remember, I said, as we noted in other versions, the star was not in or on this occasion presently falling, as the King James Version seems to indicate. I saw a star fall from heaven. No, the star had fallen, as indicated in the New King James Version. Also in the New American Standard Bible, that had fallen. New International Version, Christian Standard Bible, Young's Literal Translation, having fallen. So this star had fallen earlier. It was on the earth already. So he doesn't see a star fall. He sees a star that had already fallen, past tense. It's a Greek perfect participle in the passage. Now, I said that stars sometime represent angelic beings. I quoted Judges chapter 5 and in verse 20. Quoted from Job 38 and verse 7. And I noticed the parallel that supports a star as an angel in Revelation 20 and verse 1. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years. And he cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal on him. So we see that an angel coming down from heaven having the key to a bottomless pit. So that passage supports the idea that a star is symbolic of an angel. As Judges, we read in Judges 5 and in verse 20, Job 38 and verse 7. So stars sometimes do represent angelic beings. But a star can also indicate a person of rank and distinction. We saw that earlier in our study as well. And I quoted Isaiah 14 and in verse 12 in regard to Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. Isaiah 14 and verse 12. How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations. So, Nebuchadnezzar was said to be a star that had fallen, son of the morning, literally. The idea is that he was destroyed, brought to ruin. He was going to be destroyed. And so we had a conversation about who this star is. Many believe the star to be Satan himself. I disagree with that position, though. If you want to accept Satan as being the star, that's fine. But what I want you to do is, I don't want you to take my word for it or the word of any other man for it. I want you to search the scriptures, and your faith should be in what the Word of God says, not what I say or some other man says. So if Satan is the star, then you need to find a passage in the Scripture that supports that idea. But I looked and looked and never could find a passage that said Satan was a star. Not a passage in the Bible that I know of. Maybe you can find one. And then, of course, the idea that Satan is an angel. But I cannot find book, chapter, and verse where Satan is ever referred to as an angel. Perhaps you can find one. And so, if Satan is an angel, and you believe that, then that belief is based upon either the word of man or the word of God. If God's word is silent regarding Satan being an angel, then who am I to say that he is an angel? Who is any man to say that he's an angel or was an angel? Now, as I said in our last study, the scriptures seem to indicate that he was an angel. But the scriptures never explicitly say that he is an angel. I suggested to you that the one under consideration, a star fallen from heaven, is perhaps an angel. Now, the word fallen here doesn't mean that he's gone to ruin, doesn't mean that he's lost his salvation, that he's lapsed into sin or rebellion against God. Remember the word fallen, and we looked at several passages in connection with that word. It simply is the ideal of moving from higher elevation to lower elevation. So, the star fell from heaven. The star came from heaven, if he was an angel. But the word fallen was used. And I said, perhaps that who is under consideration is actually an angel. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. Of course, the bottomless pit is the abyss. Perhaps we'll talk about that shortly. But to this individual, whoever it is, a key was given to him to open the bottomless pit. A key is a symbol of authority. That means if he's given a key to open, he has the authority to open. So, would God give the authority to the abyss, the abode of the dead, the prison where demons reside? Would he give that authority into the hand of man? Just think about it. Would he give that authority into the hand of Satan himself? So Satan could open as he wants and let his demons go forth? Would God give Satan the power over that? I think God would perhaps maintain control of it himself. In Revelation 20, in verse 1, then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit. Perhaps he's the same angel as mentioned in Revelation 9 and verse 1. Revelation 9 and verse 1, we know that stars sometimes are symbolic of angels. So the star could be an angel with the authority to open and close the bottomless pit, because he does throw Satan in, Revelation 20, verse 1 through 3. So I believe the star that has fallen from heaven that John sees, that is already on the earth, is perhaps an angel himself. But if it's not an angel, perhaps it is some person of rank or distinction. As we noted earlier, Isaiah 14 and verse 12, regarding Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. You are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning, day star. So, if he is not an angel, perhaps he is someone that took a part in the Roman and Jewish wars. So I believe if it is not an angel, although I believe it to be an angel whom God gave authority over the abyss, because I find it hard to believe that God gave authority to some man over this spiritual realm of wickedness. Yet if it was a man, then it is possibly Gessus Florus, the Roman procurator of Judea, who ruled there from 64 until 66 A.D. Who was Gessus Florus, this Roman procurator of Judea? Well, he was noted for his antagonism toward the Jewish population. And he is credited by Josephus and many others as the primary cause of the Jewish and Roman wars. Gessus Florus was the last procurator of Judea to rule there before the Roman and Jewish wars. And this is what Josephus had to say about him in his Antiquity of the Jews in Book 20, Chapter 11 and Section 1. He said, now Gessus Florus, who was sent as successor to Albinus by Nero, filled Judea with abundance of miseries. This Florus was so wicked and so violent in the use of his authority that the Jews took Albinus to have been comparatively their benefactor. So excessive were the mischiefs that he brought upon them, for Albinus concealed his wickedness and was careful that it might not be discovered to all men. But Jesus Florus, as though he had been sent on purpose to show his crimes to everybody, made a pompous ostentation of them out to our nation, as never omitting any sort of violence or any unjust sort of punishment. For he was not to be moved by pity, and never was satisfied with any degree of gain that came in his way. Nor had he any more regard to the great than to small acquisitions, but became a partner with the robbers themselves. For a great many fell then into that practice without fear, as having him for their security and depending on him that he would save them harmless in their particular robberies, so that there was no bounds set to the nation's miseries. But the unhappy Jews, when they were not able to bear the devastations which the robbers made among them, were all under a necessity of leaving their own habitations and of flying away, as hoping to dwell more easily anywhere else in the world among foreigners than in their own country. And what need I say any more upon this head, since it was this Florus who necessitated us to take up arms against the Romans, while we thought it better to be destroyed at once than by little and little. So that's some remarks that Josephus had to say about Jesus Florus. Here's some remarks that I took from the Jewish encyclopedia recorded about Florus. Florus indeed hastened the outbreak of the revolution by rendering the condition of the Jews unbearable. He protected the Sicarii in return for a share of their plunder. The Sicarii were said by some to be, you might say, a splinter group of the Zealots. Remember, the Zealots were those who did not like to be under Roman rule. The Sicarii was, as I said, some say a splinter group of the Zealots, but they were more of Jewish terrorists than they were of those who were, you might say, of a great political persuasion. And so Florus sided with the Sicarii. They weren't nothing but terrorists, robbers and thieves, who went about raping and plundering and stealing. And of course he sided with them. During his administration, many towns were sacked, the Jewish encyclopedia goes on to say. When the Jews of Caesarea opposed the obstruction of the entrance to their synagogue by the Greeks, they bribed Florus not to interfere. Florus accordingly went to Samaria. Finding themselves overpowered, the Jews sent to him an embassy of 12, imploring his protection against the Greeks. But Florus instead threw the ambassadors into prison. Later he sent to Jerusalem, demanding for the warden of the temple treasury 17 talents of gold. His demand being refused and even ridiculed, he went to Jerusalem and ordered his soldiers to attack the upper marketplace. The Jews were killed, regardless of sex or age, and the houses plundered on that day, the 16th of May in 66 A.D. More than 3,600 were slaughtered. Many were scourged and crucified. Queen Bernice in vain implored him on her knees to stop the carnage. Florus even demanded a friendly reception of the troops appointed to seize the temple, but the people opposed him with so much vigor and determination that he left Jerusalem with a larger number of his troops. When the insurrection had broken out, Florus gave full liberty to the Greeks of Caesarea to attack the Jews. The majority of the latter were killed, the remainder by the command of Florus, were sent to the gallows or crucified. So we see this Jesus Florus. Is he the star that opened the bottomless pit? Possibly. Have we ever heard the phrase, he opened a can of worms? Because that's exactly what he did. His revolt and his antagonism against the Jewish people is what led to the bringing about of the Roman and Jewish wars. The Jewish people finally did not want to put up with it any longer. And so they fought back. But Florus and his Roman soldiers killed multitudes of Jews. And he allowed the Greeks, other Gentiles, to do the same thing. So this revolt against Florus began in earnest in May. And after Florus fled Jerusalem, the Roman garrison in Jerusalem was massacred by the Jews that started the revolt. They didn't want to put up with it any longer. We read about taking 17 talents of gold from the temple. He just sacked the temple as if Nero needed the money. He was just a thief. That's what he was. And the Jews would not put up with it any longer. So this fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. So was it an angel? Was it Jesus Florus who opened this bottomless pit? I'm not sure. If I had to choose one or the other, I'd perhaps say it was an angel, as it seems to indicate in Revelation 20. Revelation 9 and in verse 2. Revelation, well, let's mention this bottomless pit, the abyss, an extremely deep place. It occurs only twice outside the book of Revelation. Romans 10 and verse 7, where it simply refers to the abode of the dead. And then in Luke 8 and verse 31, the prison destined for the evil spirits, as Jesus cast out evil spirits. They didn't want him to send them into the abyss. That is a prison for evil spirits. This abyss is mentioned in Revelation 9 and verse 1, verse 2, Revelation 11 verse 7, Revelation 17 and verse 8, Revelation 20 verse 1 and 3. This is the abyss. It is a prison in which evil powers are confined, and out of which they can at times be let loose. But who has control of it? I want to suggest to you that God does. God has control of it. And he gave control of it, authority of it, to be opened. To let demons out? No, to bring about the Roman and Jewish wars. God has always used evil influence to bring about destruction. And that's what takes place on this occasion. Now, in our verse here, a star was fallen from heaven to the earth. To the earth, that is, into the land, literally. Into the land. Into what land? Into the land of Judea. Into the land of the Israelites. Into the land that God had given them. Into the land that they inhabited. That's the land. It's not the earth. But it was just the land. Verse 2, and he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit, like the smoke of a great furnace. Wording similar to the account of the judgment on Sodom and Gomorrah. As Abraham looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah in Genesis 19 and verse 28, and toward all the land of the plain, and he saw and behold the smoke of the land which went up like the smoke of a furnace. So is this literal, that literal smoke came up? No, it's a picture of judgment involving smoke. Later on, we're going to see what came out of that pit, that is, the demonic creatures that were actually men. But men didn't come out, but Satan's influence upon men. The sun and the air darkened indicates, of course, the extensive effect of the cloud of smoke. And yet it also invokes a prominent feature of the Lord's day of judgment. Amos 5 and in verse 20, is not the day of the Lord darkness and not light? Is it not very dark with no brightness in it? Zephaniah 1 and verse 15, that day is a day of wrath, a day of trouble and distress, a day of devastation and desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness. It's just judgment language, language that we've seen on other occasions. Then out of the smoke, locusts came upon the earth, and to them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. They were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth or any green thing or any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. Now notice, out of the smoke, not out of the pit, but out of the smoke locusts came upon the earth, again upon the land. And to them was given power as the scorpions of the land have power. They were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth or any green thing or any tree. What do locusts do? Locusts eat up the green things of the earth. That's what locusts do. That's what literal locusts do. But they were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth or any green thing or any tree. But they were commanded to harm men. So we see right away that the locusts aren't literal locusts, because literal locusts harm the grass and the trees, every green thing they could come in contact with. They were to harm only those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. So the locusts, you might say, are locust people who harm people. I want to suggest to you that it's a picture of people. It's a picture of an army depicted as locusts. Joel's picture of the day of the Lord as cloudy darkness and as an innumerable invading army desolating the land has an unmistakable influence in this text. I'm going to read from Joel 2, verse 1 and following. Joel 2, verse 1 and following. Blow the trumpet in Zion and sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord is coming. So there's a day of the Lord coming in Joel's day. A day of judgment coming. For it is at hand, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness. Like the morning clouds spread over the mountains, a people come, great and strong. Now I want you to notice how he describes these people. The like of whom has never been, nor will there ever be any such after them, even for many successive generations. A fire devours before them, and behind them a flame burns. The land is like the Garden of Eden before them, and behind them a desolate wilderness. Surely nothing shall escape them. Their appearance is like the appearance of horses, and like swift steeds so they run. With a noise like chariots, over mountaintops they leap, like the noise of a flaming fire that devours the stubble, like a strong people set in battle array. Before them the people wither in pain. All faces are drained of color. They run like mighty men. They climb the wall like men of war. Everyone marches in formation, and they do not break ranks. They do not push one another. Everyone marches in his own column. Though they lunge between the weapons, they are not cut down. They run to and fro in the city. They run on the wall. They climb into houses. They enter into the windows like a thief. The earth quakes before them. The heavens tremble. The sun and the moon grow dark, and the stars diminish their brightness, and the Lord gives voice before his army. It's his army. For his camp is very great, for strong is the one who executes his word. For the day of the Lord is great with very terrible. Who can endure it? Joel is speaking about people when he talks about them climbing up the walls and climbing in the windows. It paints a picture of locusts going through the land. But it's people. It's an army. And in our text under consideration, Revelation 9, verse 3 and following, it's an army. That's who's under consideration. These locust people, are more fearful than Joel's locusts. First of all, because they're equipped by God with scorpion-like power. Verse 11, to inflict excruciating pain. Second, because unlike natural locusts, these are assigned to target not the land's plant life, but a large portion of its human population. So the only ones not targeted will be those who have God's seal on their forehead. Why? Because God protects them. The wording is repeated from Revelation 7 and verse 3. Revelation 7 and verse 3. Revelation 7 and verse 3. Do not harm the earth and the sea or the trees till we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads. Now, who were these locust people that's described in our text? Who are they? I believe them to be the Roman soldiers under the leadership of Jesus Florus. From 64 A.D. to 66 A.D., he wreaked havoc in Judea and round about, killing many Jews, inciting the Roman and Jewish wars himself. Now, perhaps this is who is under consideration, those Roman soldiers under his leadership. If it's not Jesus Florus, and perhaps, remember, we said he could have been the one that opened the abyss, then it's perhaps Cestus Gallus. Cestus Gallus. And you say, well, who is Cestus Gallus? Well, Cestus Gallus was a governor of the Roman province of Syria. When the revolt against Jesus Florus took place by the Jews, and the Jews, after Florus left with a large contingent of his Roman soldiers from Jerusalem, and then the insurgents, the Jews, destroyed the rest of the Roman soldiers as it was in the city of Jerusalem, somebody had to put down that uprising. Somebody had to take control of the situation. Well, this individual by the name of Cestus Gallus, the governor of the Roman province of Syria, he was superior to Florus. And when the revolt started, he amassed an army of seasoned Roman veterans, and he marched across the Euphrates River. And in October, the Jews managed to band together to fight against this Roman force. This Cestus Gallus actually laid siege to the city of Jerusalem. And for about 5 months, on the way to the city of Jerusalem, he pillaged and burned and, you know, put down the Jewish revolt on his way. When he came to the city of Jerusalem and laid siege to it for about 5 months, no one knows why he lifted the siege. But all of a sudden, he left. He lifted the siege sometime in November of 66 A.D., no one knows why he did that. Historians simply do not know. They perhaps thought, well, because winter is coming and he's in the land of the enemy all by himself, he doesn't want to be caught there in the wintertime trying to fight the enemy, so he decided to pull out. But when he pulled away from Jerusalem, then the Jews massed a force and went after him and killed thousands of his Roman soldiers before he made it back to Syria. And then after that took place, of course, word came to Nero that the Jews were out of control. And so Nero assigns Vespasian and Titus to go and to destroy the city of Jerusalem if necessary, to bring the Jews under control. So these locust people are those who are Roman soldiers under the leadership of this Jesus Florus and perhaps also this Cestus Gallus. Either one of them could have been the king who is mentioned in verse 11 of Revelation 9. And they had as a king over them the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon. Abaddon, meaning destruction in Hebrew. And in the Greek, he has the name of Apollyon. Apollyon, meaning destroyer in the Greek. So, who was leading this, what I refer to as locust people? Well, one of these two individuals was, because they were to harm those men who did not have the seal of God on their foreheads. Remember, Jesus is coming in judgment upon Israel and eventually destroy the city of Jerusalem. This is how the war actually started. We see it kicking off with these people. Revelation 9 and verse 5 and following. And they were not given authority to kill them. Note this. They were not given authority to kill them. These locust people were not given authority to kill them. The word kill here simply means to destroy. It's used that way in Ephesians 2 and in verse 16 in reference to the old law being destroyed. So they were not given authority to kill them, although they killed many. They were not given authority to destroy the nation, because they didn't destroy the nation. It wasn't time for the nation to be destroyed yet. But they did a great deal of harm to the nation, that's for certain. So they were not given authority to kill them. Who is the them under consideration? It is those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. Apostate Israel, that's who's under consideration. So they were not given authority to kill those men, but to do great harm to them. Oh, they killed many, again, but they didn't destroy the nation. But to torment them, note this, for 5 months. Their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it strikes a man. And in those days men will seek death and will not find it. They will desire to die and death will flee from them. Have you ever heard anybody say, there are things worse than death? Well, during this time of war, men sought to die rather than to go through what they were going through, because the tribulation that they were undergoing was worse than death. And they sought to die, but death would flee from them. 5 months. The number 5 represents a small but significant amount of time within a larger time frame. I want you to think about this. When the revolt started in May and ended October or November, it's about 5 months. Now, I'm not saying literal 5 months here is literal 5 months. It's a small period of time in regard to the destruction of the nation of Israel. And that's what I believe it represents. 5 represents a small but significant amount of time. And so they were not given authority to destroy the nation, but to bring great harm to it. Revelation 9 in verse 7, the shape of the locust was like horses prepared for battle, and on their heads were crowns of something like gold, and their faces were like, note this, like the faces of men. I wonder why their faces were like the faces of men. Because they were men. They weren't literal locusts. They had hair like women's hair, and their teeth were like lion's teeth. Their teeth was like lion's teeth. You go back to Joel chapter 1. Joel chapter 1, I forget what verse, 6 or 7, same statement made about the people in Joel's day. And they had breastplates like breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots and many horses running into battle. I wonder why it was the sound of chariots and many horses running into battle, because that's what it was. It was literal battle that was about to be waged. Now our text pictures large armies of invading cavalry and chariots as defeating clouds of locusts, covering and devastating the land. This is just judgment language that we read about all over the Old Testament scriptures. In Judges 7 and verse 12, now the Midianites and the Amalekites or Amalekites, all the people of the east, were lying in the valley as numerous as locusts, and their camels were without number as the sand of the seashore in multitude. So here's the armies of the Midianites and the Amalekites referred to as numerous as locusts. And what about Judges 6 and verse 1 and following? Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, so the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Midians for 7 years. And the hands of the Midian prevailed against Israel. Because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made for themselves the dens and the caves and the strongholds which are in the mountains. So it was whenever Israel had sown, Midianites would come up, also Amalekites and the people of the east would come up against them. Then they would encamp against them and destroy the produce of the earth as far as Gaza and leave no substance for Israel, neither sheep nor oxen nor donkey. For they would come up with their livestock and their tents, coming in as numerous as locusts. Both they and their camels were without number, and they would enter the land to destroy it. So Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. So armies are often referred to as hordes of locusts. We see the same thing in Jeremiah 51 and verse 12. Set up the standard on the walls of Babylon. Make the guard strong. Set up the watchmen and prepare the ambushes. For the Lord has both devised and done what he spoke against the inhabitants of Babylon. O you who dwell by many waters, abundant in treasures, your end has come, the measure of your covetousness. The Lord of hosts has sworn by himself. Note this. Surely I will fill you with men as with locusts, and they shall lift up a shout against you. And so that's what we have here in the book of Revelation. We have a horde of Roman soldiers, like a horde of locusts. Revelation 9, verse 10 and 11. They had tails like scorpions, and there were stings in their tails. Their power was to hurt men 5 months. There's that time frame again. And they had as king over them the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew is Abaddon. But in the Greek, he has the name of Apollyon. Apollyon. So who is this king? Well, as I said, it's either Justus Florus or Cestus Gallus, because the soldiers belong to them. They're Roman soldiers. One woe is past. Behold, still two more woes are coming after these things. Questions or comments over Revelation chapter 9? All right, we'll pick up Revelation chapter 9 and in 13 next Wednesday evening. Revelation 9 and verse 13. Thank you very much for your kind attention this evening.